Drawing on evidence from Russian women's French-language travel writing, authored between 1777 and 1848, this paper considers the circumstances in which aristocratic and noble women used languages other than French during travel to Western Europe, with the aim of shedding light on the limits of the use of the language, as well as on the position of French in relation to other languages. The study of Russian noble women's use of and transitioning between more than two languages is interesting for several reasons. As a communicative skill, a social strategy, and a tool for identification. Such a study will help us understand both linguistic and social aspects of Francophone Russian women's communications and provide insight into the functioning of the linguistic community. Such a study is also revealing as to the nature and characteristics of Russian women's Francophone writing. For the most part, these writings remain unpublished. Those that did appear in print, with rare exceptions, were not intended for publication and or were published many years after they were written. For my purposes, I consider personal and epistolary diaries, reminiscences, albums and also memoirs where travel is a prominent theme. Due to the circumstantial nature of a certain amount of the evidence, I propose a strictly textual reading of my texts, that is to say, a reading which stays within the confines of perception and representation. While it is a well-known fact that Russian aristocratic and noble women had a high level of mastery of French, the European lingua franca, which they used on an everyday basis for spoken and written transactions, it should not be forgotten that a number of the women were in fact multilingual. Their travel writing shows that as well as French and Russian, they also knew English, German and Italian. I draw evidence for this paper from 19 texts written by 17 authors, 70% of which knew Italian, 47% English and 29% German. Similar evidence in other life-writing texts suggests that these writers are representative of women of their class. Russian noble women's knowledge of several languages was a direct result of their education. They learned a number of languages from an early age from their mothers and governesses. Knowledge of foreign languages was a sign of social status and required for social success. Some of the women also spent much of their childhood abroad. It is interesting that the use of French seems to require no comment, whereas the women indicate when they employ other languages. French was the default language. They give no indications that they used these languages as their main means of communication in the associated countries or during travel in general. Etiquette did not dictate their use, and the women mastered them less well than they did French. Placing particular emphasis on the use of Russian, Elena Gachana and Catherine have investigated Russian noble women's code-switching and mixing in their French language personal diaries. But little is known about the circumstances in which women life writers abandoned the use of French in favour of other European languages, as well as Russian, during travel. And so why, you must be asking yourselves, are these travel writings particularly suitable for such a study on Russian noble women's use of different languages? Well, the travel writings are valuable documents containing much information on elite women's use of different languages, as well as to their capacities in these languages, as the women find themselves in a number of different language zones at their destinations of travel, and have increased opportunities to use languages other than French and Russian. In unfamiliar environments, the use of certain languages, which are taken out of their usual context in the lives of the women, become more or less appropriate, useful, or adequate. The women's use of other languages is also revealing as to the circumstances in which it became desirable or necessary to use languages other than French, and the texts offer examples of their use of a number of languages in the original and unaltered state. It will be informative to briefly consider the situations in which French was used by the women during travel in Western Europe, as it will highlight the limits of its use. As we know, European high society was defined socially by the language they spoke. Social etiquette required the use of French, so high society social life across Europe at courts, private gatherings, spas, promenades, theatre and in the ballroom was conducted in French, particularly in multinational and lingual groups. As lingua franca, French created unified fields of exchange and communication across Europe amongst the social elite. Speakers and readers of French were able to understand one another in conversation and via print and paper. Travellers also regularly occupied themselves with reading and life writing in that language. It is clear that French played an important and ubiquitous role in the everyday lives of the travellers. But interestingly, the travel writing indicates that Francophone countries were not the main goal of travel. In fact, geographical location was almost irrelevant to the women's use of the language. Of the 48 authors in my corpus that made journeys to Western Europe, at least 25% went to French-speaking countries, whereas at least 63% travelled to Italy and or the German states. Other destinations included Poland, Austria, Turkey, Greece, Spain, Denmark, Holland, Britain and Ireland. But geographical location did play a role in the travellers' decision to employ languages other than French. As we will see, English, German and Italian were used almost exclusively in the associated countries, although not as the main means of communication and in specific circumstances. Geographical location does not impact upon the women switching to Russian, but their mother tongue is also reserved for specific circumstances. So let us move on to consider the circumstances in which the women switched from French to another language, whether by choice or through necessity. I investigate the main purposes of and motivations behind such alternations as represented in the travel writings, and consider whether or not these women used other languages in the same way as French. So I examine in turn cases where the interlocutor does not know French or prefers to use a different language, the insertion of words and phrases in languages other than French, reading, education, and the use of quotation. Where evidence permits, I also comment on the women's level of mastery and attitude to using English, German, Italian, and Russian. So the most common cause for using languages other than French in conversation during travelling Western Europe with non-Russians is when the women's interlocutor cannot speak French. The vast majority of such cases occur when the travellers find themselves in the necessity to communicate with lower status people. A number of women spoke the local language and were thus able to interact with local people, where necessary, carrying out their own affairs concerning travel and accommodation arrangements, as well as purchasing provisions en route. Muraviova uses Italian to ask directions in Rome, while her aunt deals with accommodation arrangements. Muraviova, who has a strained relationship with her, is critical of her attempts in Italian, however. Muraviova indicates that she manipulates Italian at a higher level than her aunt, who could improve her language skills in several areas. On the Isle of Wight, Bariatinska indicates that she and her mother had direct dealings with the English cook and housemaid at their residence regarding household matters. On her journey down the Rhine, Dashkova decides that her German is better than that of the designated interpreter, and so she takes over conducting purchases of provisions with local peasants. She is reluctant to use the language because she is lacking in practice. The expression of reluctance to speak German and take on the role of interpreter is a form of feminine modesty, although actually she is boasting of her competence. Like Muraviova, mastery of foreign languages is a preoccupation, and the women feel that it is important to be seen to have a good level of competence before speaking to natives of the language in public, even of lower classes. For some women, the use of a foreign language, that is one more foreign to them than French, is accompanied with unconventional behaviour. They condescend to their lower class acquaintances and interact with them as they would with friends of their own social class and members of their own sex. Bariatinska, for example, enjoys conversation with her boatman, with whom she appears to travel alone each morning as she goes to take the waters on the Isle of Wight. There are also occasions when members of the upper classes did not know French, and so the women switched to a different language in order to ease social interactions. An Englishman and his young daughters visit Lubomirska and her mother in Puma. They do not speak French, so the women communicate with them in English and Italian. In high society, some of the travellers switch to another language as they stand to gain more personal benefit in social situations. In Italy, Kurakina notes that the fact that she speaks Italian endears her to her new acquaintances and ensures that she is treated and received well in their society. It is not only in conversation but in writing that the women communicate with their foreign friends and acquaintances in languages other than French. While in Rome, Muraviova engaged in correspondence with acquaintances made in Italy, in Italian. The women also employed languages other than French in ecclesiastical situations. In Italy, when Kurakina was introduced to Pope Pius VII, the interview was carried out in Italian, on the basis that he preferred to speak his native language, despite having a perfect mastery of French. The reason for the language switch here was deference. The use of French could be undesirable in certain high society situations when the travellers are in the company of their compatriots. So, as Catherine mentioned earlier, the women could take advantage of their non-Russian speaking entourage and use Russian as a secret language to hide what they were thinking or saying. Their reasons for using their mother tongue varied, but could be the result of a desire for discretion, to mock, to joke, or to express discontent. Galvina spoke Russian with a Protasova in the street in Paris in order to be discreet and achieve the correct etiquette for an introduction with Madame de Charol. In Warsaw, Varvara Tokastanova shared a joke about Isabella Sartoyska's appearance and character with her fellow ladies-in-waiting and Grand Duke Konstantin, and refers to her as Kievskaya Viedma throughout her time in the Polish capital. There is evidence in several of the texts that when the women are in a community composed uniquely of their compatriots in Western Europe, they communicate in their mother tongue. On arrival at Reichenbach in Kandertal for Easter celebrations in 1821, Elizaveta Tokastanova indicates that when Russians found themselves together abroad, they spoke Russian. In Rome, Muravyova notes that speaking Russian with her compatriots was expected and that she was instructed to do so by her aunt. She also reveals that she and her travelling companions spoke Russian amongst themselves, and the women took pleasure in speaking their mother tongue. The women frequently inserted words and phrases in languages other than French on the pages of their travel writings. In this context, it is not the case that the words and phrases and passages used by the women do not exist in French or are untranslatable, but rather the use of English, German and Italian was motivated by the desire to lend a certain air of authenticity and exoticism to their accounts of travel, as well as to demonstrate the women's knowledge of local realia and customs. The women also used English, German and Italian for nicknames for their travelling companions or acquaintances they made en route. The use of these languages can also be a way of making a word stand out or drawing attention to a concept. It was far more common for the women to turn to Russian than other languages when they either did not know the French or had temporarily forgotten it. But there is no evidence in my corpus that the women were more competent or comfortable in Russian than French. However, there are a few indications that Russian was the more dominant in their minds, as they mixed up Cyrillic and Latin alphabets on the pages of their texts. The influence of Russian pronunciation can at times also be seen in their spelling. But the use of Russian in the travel writings, unlike that of other languages, usually indicates the inadequacy of the French language in the situation in question, rather than the linguistic deficiencies of the traveller or deliberate stylistic decisions. It should be noted, though, that the women's Russian can be phonetic and inaccurate. Russian is employed in the travel writing to record Russian proper nouns, toponyms, proverbs, nicknames and pet names, as well as to express specifically Russian reality in cases where French does not provide an adequate translation or an equivalent simply does not exist. The use of Cyrillic script may be used to avoid the difficulty of transliteration and or translation. Cyrillic is especially used to record terminology linked to orthodoxy. Where the women are able to attend Orthodox church services across Europe, they employ Russian in Church Slavonic in order to participate in services, say their prayers, and interact with religious officials. Languages other than French also appear on the pages of the travel writings when the women provide reports of speech from conversations they had in other languages, usually with lower class people, which provides a sense of immediacy to the account, but also a touch of the picturesque to the traveller's descriptions and anecdotes. As with the insertion of words and passages in languages other than French, they assume that the intended reader, primarily Russian relatives and friends, can cope with quoted speech as they provide no translation, which indicates that knowledge of multiple languages amongst Russian high society was not unusual. For example, on the sea journey from Constantinople to Trieste, Vasilieva is terrified by storms. At Var in the Adriatic Sea, an old sailor tries to reassure her, and she reports his words in Italian, which heightens the tension she was feeling and adds drama to her account. She flags up the use of Italian by underlining it. Reading foreign language texts was an important part of the Russian women's education, and it was also one of the travellers' favourite occupations. During their travels in Western Europe, the women noted reading French, English, German, Italian and Russian language reading material. At least 54% of the reading the women did, as mentioned in the text, was of Francophone authors and in French. They also read English and German works in French translation. My figures reveal that 11 and 12% of the reading they did was of Italian and Anglophone authors respectively, including James Fenimore Cooper and Dante. 7% of German authors, including E.T.A. Hoffmann. The women read a mixture of genres, in English, German, Italian, everything from classical texts to modern novels. The women apparently read less Russian language material during travel than at home. Of the 17 authors, only Varvara Tokastanova notes reading in Russian. To a large extent, the reading the travellers did would have been dictated by what was available to them on the road and at their travel destinations. This information is valuable, as in general we know little about what women read. This evidence reveals that the women were competent multilingual readers. Learning languages played an important role in Russian women's education. While Russian noblewomen's travels in Western Europe do not have the same educational purposes as those of their male homologue, who, in line with the practices of the traditional Grand Tour, studied in foreign institutions with the aim of finishing their education and returning to Russia to begin or advance a civil or military career, it can be seen that Russian women nevertheless invested time whilst on their travels, furthering their education by the study of different languages. Some of the younger girls went beyond French, namely when they were learning the language of the country in which they were staying. Luba Mirska, who was taking Italian lessons from a tutor in Italy, reveals that she wrote without difficulty in Italian and was reading Japanese history in that language with her tutor, of which she understood almost everything. So while she was learning Italian, she was simultaneously using it as a medium for learning, which indicates that she manipulated the language to a relatively higher level. Muraviova had reached a level in her study of Italian that allowed her to learn independently, and she dedicated time to maintaining her language skills during her stay in Rome. Some of the women also studied English. Lubomirska indicates that she and her younger brother Emmanuel had an English nanny or governess who accompanied them on their travels in Italy. Further evidence which shows that learning new languages was not just confined to the younger girls, and that the women did not just concentrate on learning the language of the country in which they were staying, is the fact that Dashkova was learning English at Spa and Aix-en-Provence. It is interesting to note, however, that French, as we might expect, and German were the languages of tuition. As an educational exercise, Baryatinska, who was learning English, switched to this language when writing her reminiscences during the account of her visit to her mother's family in Germany. She provides no justification for the language switch, which occurs mid-account of a trip into the Harz Mountains following Ellipsis. From this point, her whole account is written in English. This is the only text in my corpus that has more than short passages in a language other than French. Baryatinska's command of English is excellent. It is generally both idiomatic and grammatically correct. She is capable of expressing herself in all the same subjects as she does in French. It is only on rare occasions that her phrasing is awkward or that she seems to have been unable to think of a suitable word and so leaves a blank space in her text, presumably meaning to go back and fill it in later. In contrast to her French-speaking account of her stay in Germany, Baryatinska's English language descriptions of England included lengthy quotations, but at no point did she identify her sources. The style in these passages is far more literary and sophisticated than her own English. It should not be forgotten, though, that copying was an important part of learning at this time for Russian women. Baryatinska is not the only writer to have included quotations in languages other than French in her text. While all the women were capable of expressing themselves eloquently in French using their own words, where they do use other languages in passages or in sections of their text, the tendency is to use words other than their own. While this is a very important difference from the way they use French, the reasons for these brief excursions into other languages vary from traveller to traveller. For example, Dashkova quotes poet and amateur landscape gardener Alexander Pope to express the view that landscapes should not be embellished to the detriment of what nature and history have already given it. The use of English quotation allows Dashkova to achieve a number of things. She demonstrated how well-read she was in English literature. She showed her familiarity with contemporary aesthetic trends in picturesque landscape gardening. She indirectly affirmed her authority on aesthetic taste in relation to landscape and architecture. And finally, her use of quotation served to justify her criticism, which comes from a higher masculine authority. Myatlyeva inserts a poem in Russian into her diary that her son Ivan Petrovich Myatlyeva has composed to reflect the painful memories and powerful emotions evoked at the sight of the sea and the moonlight at Bognor Regis. Her substitution of French for Russian in this case suggests that not only can her sentiments be better expressed in Russian, but that it is a more skillful pen than her own that can put them into words. In this case, Russian is more appropriate than French to express deep emotion. And so in conclusion, the use of languages other than French in the travel writing has everything to do with situation, speech partners, proficiency and identity construction. When the travellers switch back and forth between French and other languages, they are not being careless or clumsy, but rather facilitating communication by lowering language barriers, as well as consolidating their cultural identity as educated Russian women belonging to the social elite. The use of English, Italian, German and Russian can fill a linguistic need for a word or expression. The travellers find that notions or concepts can be better expressed in a language other than French. The use of languages other than French maximises communication and in certain cases strengthens not only the content but the essence of the message. The women alternate between languages as a communicative or social strategy to show speaker involvement, mark group identity, exclude someone, raise their status and show expertise. We have seen that language switching can also take place in different modalities. The women use different languages not only in conversation but in reading and writing, and they found pleasure in the practice. The limits placed on the use of French were predominantly social rather than geographical or strictly linguistic. The use of another language allows them to transgress social frontiers, further their education, linguistic accomplishments and social success, and address risque topics for a woman, as well as alter the tonality of their writing. It is clear that Russian was used differently from the other languages. The women's use of their mother tongue reveals that it is inadequacies and unsuitability of the French language itself that places limits on its use in their travel writing. It is also the universality of French that places self-imposed limits on its use for the travellers. The women's use of Russian in their travel writing further serves to disprove the stereotypical image of Russian noblewomen who could not manipulate their native tongue and who operated entirely in French. There is a hierarchy of frequency of use of languages, of which French is at the top. The unique status of French is apparent in the travel writings, because although many of the women were multilingual and reported reading, writing and conversing in English, German, Italian and Russian, they nonetheless selected French as their main language of spoken and written communication. But significantly, while it was the exigencies of life abroad that often led them to use French as their primary language, it was also practicalities of life in a foreign place that placed limits on their use of the language. And so we see that while the alternation between languages was a versatile strategy to meet the complex communicative demands of foreign travel, switching between languages was also part of the women's lingua franca and an important feature of their francophone writing. Thank you for your attention.